The People's Podcast.
Hey, yo, Hub Show.
Podcasting and broadcasting about everything and nothing from the center of the universe and covering Baltimore, New York, D.C., Philly, Pittsburgh, and all points in between. It's Hub City's own, The Hub Show. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Canfield and Jay Heisch.
3, 2, 1. The Hub Show, Jay Heisch, Chris Canfield.
Mm-hmm.
And we have some guests here tonight.
Yeah.
At the Emerald Studio.
Who are these people?
Yeah, who are these strangers?
Yeah.
They've both been on the Hub Show before.
Oh, okay.
One of them more than once.
Really?
Ken Buckler's right. Back.
Hello, hello.
With the history of the Washington County area, Washington County, Maryland. Got some good stuff.
Yeah.
Some deep
stuff.
I've been asking for this one for a while, so here we go.
Yep.
Yeah. And also with us from the Beacon House Incorporated, Mr. Anthony Williams.
Hey, good afternoon, evening.
Much better.
Much better?
Yeah. How's it going, Anthony?
Pretty good.
That's cool.
Pretty chill day.
Yeah. All right. Well, you said go from positive to negative here, Ken, so we're going to do just that. I'm just kidding. Beacon House. I know what it's about right here in the Washington County, Maryland area, but I want to hear your... You can spin it a lot better than I can. What's the elevator pitch?
The elevator pitch would be it's grounded in STEAM education. Science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics. We do a lot of programming for youth and their families in Washington, Frederick, Berkeley County, West Virginia, and also in Franklin County, Pennsylvania. But we also have started building our wraparound services as well. I'm a licensed health insurance navigator to help people find insurance through the ACA here in Maryland, which is the Maryland Health Benefits Exchange. So we know that a lot of people, if they don't have their basic needs met, they can't focus on education. So we try to do the wraparound services as well, building those out. But we focus and ground in STEAM education because those are the careers of the 21st century and beyond.
Can you get me health insurance for less than $700 a month?
Depends on how much you make and your household.
Well,
if you're under 48,000 or your family size is a little bit bigger, you can get pretty good premiums with the advanced premium tax credits for maybe $5 to $7 for a month.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me say this before we go further.
What?
I
said $5 or $7 a month.
You didn't add a zero on
there. No, $5 or $7 a month if you have a certain income and you qualify through the...
Why do I get punished for being successful?
You need to talk to our federal government about that one. I don't have control over that.
Just because I make more doesn't mean you should take more.
Again, the middle class, we know the middle class is always the one who pays higher everything.
Yeah.
We know that always. I can't do anything about
that. It's ridiculous.
That's why you have to vote.
That's why we had them on.
That's why you have to vote. Yeah. We have to have better candidates out there that actually support change. So that's a whole other conversation that
it is.
We have talked about a little
bit already.
It's a whole
other show,
sure. Yeah. A whole other series of shows, probably.
Yeah, probably. Going on, brother.
Preacher.
Right.
So anyway, well, let's back up for a second for the uninitiated. We're from the Hub City, but you headquarter out of Hagerstown, Maryland,
correct.
Washington County, Maryland.
Correct.
We're literally 10 minutes from the Pennsylvania border,
correct.
About an hour northwest of Baltimore in the D.C.
They call that
area.
The Mason-Dixon line.
The Mason-Dixon line, right.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the Mason-Dixon roller Dixon.
Hence that.
For all those who know what we're
hence
talking about.
Hence Mason and Dixon who actually surveyed the line. Yeah.
That guy, too.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
We always forget about that guy, right?
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you guys need a history lesson on that?
Right?
I think probably. Ken could probably give you
one. I just learned today that Mulholland is the guy who brought water to L.A.
Yeah.
You know that? I didn't know that.
That's why the Mulholland
He was the guy who built the aqueduct. One. Yeah. And I know about Mulholland Drive. Everybody knows about that.
Right. Oops,
I guess. I don't know. L.A. is one of those weird cities where you can, like, you don't have to actually ever go there, but you know the whole road system just from hearing people talk about it all the time.
Right. There we go. So Beacon House.
Correct.
All about the STEM.
STEAM. We added in the arts.
That's right. You added the A in there. That's right. I follow you on Facebook. I watch all the stuff you guys are doing. Again, Washington County. It's not just Hagerstown. You're spread out. You're in Frederick County. And we talked a bit about this, and I use the F word here, franchise. You're not trying to franchise this thing.
It's like, which F word are you talking
about? Well, you know. Not food.
There's a lot of them.
Lots of them.
Yeah. But I'm just saying. So, I mean, what is the vision?
The vision is to grow as much as we can within the four counties that I just mentioned previously. So to figure out how we can reach adults, we're looking at in Frederick County, community living, working with them, with people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, more for workforce development for the adults. Here in Washington County, figuring out how ways we can work with adults here as well, just providing services to everyone. And our slogan is whole brain learning for the whole family. We're trying to really make sure that we're doing all we can to increase the access to education here in Washington County, Frederick County, Berkeley, and Franklin counties as we move and grow.
I gotcha. Because you, like, you just rattled off a bunch of stuff. You're covering a lot of ground.
Right.
It's not just an after-school program for the kids. It goes way and well beyond all that.
So as a typical person who...
that would be Chris.
Who's the typical person?
As a typical family or whatever that uses your services, what would their day be?
So right now, it could be a family that we have an after-school program at Cascade Elementary School, which is just from the after-school hours of 2:30 until 6 o'clock.
Right.
Could be the Family Learning Center at Mulberry Lofts, where we have daily, Monday through Friday, from 3 to 6 p.m. activities that the family can come in with their kids and do. Tuesdays, there's Animal Adventures, where we have Critters and Conservation come in with, like, three different animals.
Yeah.
They learn about the animals. They can feed the animals. They actually get to understand a little bit more about the natural habitats where the animals come from. And then the families can also utilize the other learning labs. We have four learning labs. One's more science-focused.
Right.
One is a tech lab with computers, robots, 3D printers.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
The other ones are an art lab. The art lab has all the visual arts for painting, different things like that. They can
just,
you know,
like the slogan says, right? You're covering these grounds.
Everything. Sounds, and then we have a performing arts lab where they have two keyboards, some percussion instruments that they can play.
Right.
It's also where our little lending library is for the kids to, like, grab books and read. And
that's a good way for parents to bond with their kids, too.
It's a great way
You tap into the kids' interest, and then you get the parents to come along, and they get to bond.
That's what I mean. I'm not trying
the kids are interested in. Right?
I'm not trying to crap on any other organization or their efforts at all whatsoever. Everyone serves a good purpose, but, I mean, you're not just the Boys and Girls Club after school, you know what I mean? That's a lot of people think. I know it for a fact. Now, the Beacon House, another place to drop your kid off at, you got all these programs going for them. But it goes well beyond that.
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
when
you
look at whole brain learning,
whole
brain, like you're talking about, like, a lot of people try to isolate the science and tech always from the arts, but there are other good organizations that do that as well.
Sure, there are.
But it's the whole idea that we are more about everyone, and so we're building our homeschool program as well. We have an AmeriCorps who's just focusing on homeschool, so we're having activities during the day, bringing in families together so that they can get extended learning as parents grow with their kids in the homeschool atmosphere. We know that there's a lot of times the science or the math gets a little harder to teach and have all the, you know, materials like microscopes. We have microscopes for them to use. We have different things that they can come in and do. So we just offer those services. And then one of the things that we learned is art, having all the art supplies and getting kids to do art in homeschool is harder.
A lot that goes into this.
It's a lot of work for
needed,
homeschooling. And so we have a AmeriCorps who homeschooled her kids who has a lot of experience in several states understanding homeschooling. So she's come on board to do a lot of work with homeschool.
That's a good adaptation,
it's
too.
All over the place,
like an addition to homeschooled kids, you know. It's just like an add-on.
See, we do a lot with Hagerstown Community College, the Con Ed department, the continuing ed.
Right.
We offer a lot of courses. We do SAT prep there.
Yeah.
We're building more and more with our summer programming with HCC for College for Kids. That's what we're doing in Frederick County with Frederick County Parks and Rec, building out programming that we offer during the day and weekends and even summertime for kids in Frederick County.
Right.
So it's all about how we can find different avenues to go into different places and increase the access, achievement, and awareness of STEAM education or learning.
I gotcha.
Gotcha. So when the education system fails and everything goes online, you're going to fill in the gaps.
Two topics from now. I'll tell you what I'm talking about. First, I'm going to back up. We had you on briefly, like 5-10 minutes in the summertime.
Correct.
In one of our multi-guest panels there. So it was kind of like a little blip. But back up, because I know you used to be in the public education system. So here we go. You used to be a teacher. What's your history?
Yes.
How long did you do that for? What did you teach?
So I was in education since I graduated from college in 2002.
Right.
So I was a science teacher. I did 2 years in juvenile corrections. So I worked in a private juvenile correction facility, taught all different sciences for all different types of programs that were there.
Sure.
Then I went to public schools and taught in public schools in Frederick County for 5 years, did middle school and high school.
Like the male Michelle Pfeiffer.
I don't know. Wait, we'll get to that in a second. We'll get to that in a second. Dangerous Minds is later on in my career.
I got it.
Okay, so then I went overseas for 4 years and taught at international schools in three other countries. Came back, taught in Washington County. Went to D.C. Public Schools and taught at Anacostia High School. And there's my Dangerous Minds one for you. And then I stepped out and went into admin. I was an academic dean there, and that's when I started realizing some things that I didn't love about public education.
Right.
And then got the highly effective bonus and used that in my experience and my degrees and everything to start Beacon House. And that was January of 2017. Moved to Montgomery County Public Schools, where I ended my public school teaching career as an academic intervention teacher, so more working with kids outside of the classroom in, like, science or technology, really helping them
Which sets up for what you're doing.
Yeah, well, really helping them with behavior, academics, and attendance, supporting them that were general education kids, so they didn't have IEPs. They were just kids that needed extra love and support, is what I said. They just needed a parent, basically, at school to keep up with them, knowing what was going on.
Which is the biggest issue.
So that was my last year and a half as I was getting Beacon House up and running.
Yeah.
I was doing that, so commuting down there, and quit that in June and do Beacon House full time.
That's it. Hats off to you. I mean, you're taking on.
So
it's a challenge.
Answer years, about 17 years
in the public sector.
In public, private.
And you wore several different shoes, so you see it from several different.
Yeah, I was on admin.
Admin, yeah.
Yeah, I did admin. I was on the school leadership team for a long period of time. I was a department chair since 2005. Right. So I've been a department chair for science and technology since 2005, on the school leadership team since 2004. So just always having district level positions and then getting involved with the National Science Teachers Association.
What I'm saying is,
well,
you have experience to back up your, if anyone has come at you about what they, has anyone complained about Beacon House?
People complain about everything.
What's to complain about,
though? We complain about everything.
Yeah, I know that, but honestly. Yeah, have you got any pushback for it?
Pushback in what way? Do you
I don't know. I'm asking you at all.
I feel like our community has been pretty receptive and pretty
it.
Good
yeah.
about embracing what's going on, understanding the importance of it.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing was really for the community to understand what we were doing and who we were. And that's the biggest thing. As we started to develop our mission and our vision and organize, it was more figuring out where we were fitting in. And now working with a lot of community organizations, because if you know anything about Beacon House, the Beacon is capitalized. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. Mm-hmm. It's an acronym. It means that we build equity and access and achievement through community outreach networks. And so we work with partner organizations.
There you have it.
We love working together. And you know that if you look at our Facebook page or our social media, we build relationships with other community organizations, with a lot of different groups and people, and try to find ways that we can work together. Whether it's faith-based or non-faith-based community, anyone and everyone, we try to figure out ways that we can increase the access to STEAM learning.
Yeah. How about pushback from the government when you were setting it up?
I follow you on Facebook.
Like
you're getting
was it easy to get this whole thing up and running?
Well, if you know anything, and I'm now a licensed consultant for the Standards of Excellence for the Maryland Nonprofits, is the whole idea of, like, how to get nonprofits up and running, and how to make sure nonprofits that are up and running, that they have all their, like, stuff together. I now help people who are looking at, you know, starting nonprofits and things like that. It's not a difficult process. It's understanding the checklist and what you need to go through. If you start out with knowledge and education, that's why I'm going to talk about all the time.
Yeah.
Once you have the knowledge and education, anything is possible.
Well,
and that's why Nelson Mandela said education is the most powerful weapon you can use to change the world. So if you're looking at things and you always come from the education perspective, it's not hard if you know the steps to go.
Yeah.
And you know them, or you're learning them, or you did learn them.
Well, again, Maryland Nonprofits has a great checklist. So if you're looking to start a nonprofit, there's stage 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
In just 10 minutes, you rattle off a bunch of things that you do and are involved with. You're one of the business people I know, man. I watch him on Facebook every day. He's getting certified in this.
It just seems like there should be like a million miles of red tape.
I drew the line at CDL. I'm like, we're getting like a 20-passenger bus donated to us. And I was like, no, I do not need to get my CDLs. That's one thing drawing the line at. I will not have my CDLs.
Hey, Chris just said the word. It's not so much pushback, but what's the red tape been like? Has it been any?
There's not red tape,
really.
The biggest thing in the nonprofit world is figuring out your funding revenue streams. And if you can figure out your revenue streams, then you're golden. It's figuring out how to get the actual financial support behind it, because a lot of people don't understand nonprofits at the end of the day. No one owns them. They're public entities.
Okay.
The public charity, they're owned by the public. Whatever we actually accrue in assets and things like that, if we dissolve, it has to go out to the public as well. No right. one keeps that. There's no owner. Right. So as I invested tons of my own personal money into it,
sure.
I'm not the owner. There is no owner. The public owns it, generally, is what we say. It's a public entity. Yeah. So
eventually, if it goes away, it'll just dissolve.
Just dissolves, but hopefully it doesn't, because as we grow, we build partnerships, we build relationships, we build importance in the community and our networking.
Absolutely.
We continue to survive and grow and figure out ways that we grow as a nonprofit, like the big ones like Goodwill, United Way, Boys and Girls Club. All those have grown and grown nationally. So.
All right. Well, before we get to my last topic with you, Anthony, let me ask you something, Chris. As a layman just like I am, if someone said to you, now that you know, hey, what's Beacon House? What is it about? What would you tell them?
It's a laundry list of things to read off here, man.
It's a museum.
It's a museum where you go in and it's all about lighthouses.
Right. And it's about seashells and it's a marina.
They have a list of every lighthouse in the world.
It's an aquarium.
Yeah. How they're made.
It's the Washington Thanks. County
that,
Aquarium.
That sums up in like a
That's
good
what
sentence
Chris got
there.
From
Thanks,
you in
Chris.
10 minutes, man.
He's actually not too far off, though, because really I look at Beacon House right. as a beacon of light.
For those who need the
extra help with their education, especially those who are interested in STEAM
right.
topics.
And let's be honest, it's not just Washington County. Like
right.
Many places in this country, especially.
It's nationwide,
but
worldwide.
In the state of Maryland, Washington County is it's got its issues.
Oh, yeah.
It's got its problems, and it's got some...
But they're not unique to just Washington County.
Absolutely not.
That's
true.
That's the beauty of it.
Anthony is bringing something to
yes.
it that is not there. He's filling a void.
He is filling a void locally that really needs to be filled nationally. And
absolutely.
I absolutely see him having great success with Beacon House mm-hmm. for years to come.
Oh, thank you. Well,
and that's why I love like partnerships like with Ken and talking about like what we do. Like one organization that I know he works a lot with is Discovery Station, and we do a lot with them because we're both about STEAM, and we're figuring out ways that we both work together as organizations to promote STEAM education and STEAM
gotcha.
Learning here mm-hmm. in the forest state because we know those things.
I hear more and more about this Discovery Station. Just
you don't know about
the
Discovery Station?
Well, in the past, like.
Downtown
year,
Hagerstown,
year half,
for
years.
Those not
I
mean,
that's because here. There's great leadership there, and I really love a lot of the board members there that have a great vision.
Yeah.
And just promoting a wonderful lady to executive director, they're on the right track as well.
Yes.
Brittany is going to take Discovery Station to great heights.
Brittany
as well.
Webb?
Yes.
I know the name. Listen, I'm for all those who are listening who aren't from Hagerstown, Discovery Station is like a children's museum in the heart downtown of Hagerstown.
And the sign has been there, and the building's been there forever.
And Chris has never known what it is.
But
like
always,
a lot of people in Hagerstown,
always,
they just
always,
drive by it.
You drive by it, you look over, you go, oh,
right.
yeah, there's that thing again. But then the past, like, maybe 2 years, I'm starting to hear people in the community are just
there's more
about
buzz
it
about
all
it.
Over the place.
Probably
going
to your
house.
It goes with leadership. It goes with people that are there that are passionate and committed
right.
to
right.
getting kids in this community and families really learning about STEAM and the importance of why we need to be science literate and technology literate
right.
as well as have an appreciation for the arts.
Right.
Those go hand in hand.
We got to stay ahead of the machines.
Yeah, well.
The machines. Not the machine. Plural.
The machines are going to get smarter. We
AI,
have to stay
baby.
Smarter than them.
The
you're thinking Terminator?
Coming.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Too much Terminator as a kid.
Robotics, man. Mm-hmm. What's up?
Jay and I will talk more about that later.
Oh, for sure. Oh, yeah. But my last topic with you, all right? This is where it gets a little deep.
Uh-oh.
Anthony, is, when I was discussing this with you and getting prepped for this show with you, we mentioned because you came from the public education sector,
mm-hmm.
and now you're doing your own private thing. It's nonprofit, but it's your push. It's your effort. And it, combined with other people's efforts, of course. But you're the nucleus of it. And...
If great great cell reference there.
Thank
good.
You.
Or
tried.
Adam reference with everyone.
Ask the genius over here, Chris. Yeah. But anyway, no, but I'm trying to say, we talked about, especially right here, Washington County, Maryland, your conversation with other people in the education department around here. If you had it your way, you'd burn the whole education system down to the ground and start from scratch. I mean, a lot of
burning.
People feel that way.
I would
way.
Never say burning it to the ground.
Okay, what would you do, Godzilla? Just stomp all over?
No, I would rethink and come to the drawing board and figure out we are in a different era. We were looking at different outcomes.
That was just a
right?
metaphor, man.
But
we're
looking at different
anything.
Outcomes than what we had 200-300 years ago when the education system kind of started. So we're not looking at a factory model. We're not looking at a homogenous kind of skill set to come out with. Right. We're looking at people to come out with really tailored skills for what they want to do to be successful. And that's what we're not doing as great
right,
as.
We're just, we're, you're right.
It's, yeah, it's, you're generalizing
your
everyone.
Factory.
Yeah, we generalize everyone.
Your warehousing so
we take, skills. We take really unique individuals and how they learn and things like that and
right.
try to get everyone to have the same outcomes on certain things at the end of their 12, 13 years in public ed. That's where I have a big problem.
But do you believe that starts at like the kindergarten, first grade level where you're getting your basic... You know,
I mean, that's
reading
I,
and writing and whatnot.
What starts there?
I'm asking you.
What starts there?
I mean, the what kids are they developed enough when they're 8 years old? They know what they want to do already.
It's not that they know what they want to do. It's that providing learning experiences where they
are
engaged. They actually can figure out things and be engaged in things that they're interested in and learning more about that. And it's about exposure. But it's also about teaching thinking skills and critical thinking skills, problem solving skills. And the biggest one is teamwork or collaborative work. That's why I'm involved with like Destination Imagination a lot here in Maryland. We help sponsor up at Cascade. We have about four teams of kids competing this year with the PTA who's helping us with the funding for the kids to do that.
Right.
But it's all about creative problem solving, getting kids to work collaboratively to solve problems, to actually be creative, thinking outside the box. We need more of those skills. And a lot of the testing that we do kind of doesn't focus on those skill sets, and that's what we need to do more of, I feel like, in learning and education in general, public, private, wherever you're talking about. Homeschool,
revamped,
we just need to tap in and figure out ways to make sure that our youth and our adults that come out actually have those that skill set, that critical thinking, that collaborative work, problem solving, thinking outside the box, because we have the internet, we have the access to knowledge.
And the information,
But if you don't know how to use that knowledge, if you don't know how to construct meaning, how to construct your own critical analysis of what's going on, we look at that with our society right now, where we are politically, where we are as a society with all the stuff that's going on the last couple of years. It's really about critical thinking, understanding information, and figuring out what's real, what's not, what to do with the information, and how to apply it. Those are the big skills that we don't teach anymore.
What do you think, Chris? Do you agree? Dr. Canfield?
I concur.
You concur.
Do you concur? I concur.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
No, that's why I...
Ken concurs.
That's why
absolutely.
That's why I dropped out, though. It was because I was just disinterested. And that was in 10th grade. And it was the fact that, you know, I could tell that they were dumbing down the classes to try to get to a common level. You know, they wouldn't let people just kind of blow off or go off on their own thing.
And I'm working with families right now that are working with me, like my AmeriCorps... members, their kids are and their kids of color here in Washington County that are really exceptional, and figuring out ways to keep them challenged within the public school system has been difficult because there's not all these avenues to go to always challenge kids that are really bright.
There's no branches.
And but they don't always want to promote because then they're too young by the group of kids that they're with. So that's why some of them are looking at private. Some of them are going back to homeschooling.
Because they're getting lumped in,
Well, there's not a lot of ways to keep on developing those like actual interests of those kids and keep them engaged and figuring out pathways for them in a large system. Mm. It's just not designed that way.
And and like you said, the internet's changed everything except education.
Well, and the whole idea,
It's changed your way
of shopping. We have a factory model. We have large quantities of kids coming into a large school system, and we're trying to, get one homogenous result at the end, where we need more of a boutique system, where you have schools that are tailored to meet individual needs, that have learning plans that are designed for that individual unique student for the 21st century learner, and we're not doing that. We're doing still the factory model, producing large quantities of the same thing.
That being said, Ann, let me ask you a question. Let's just clear the board for a second. Let's just say money, no object, nothing like that. How would it be set up right here in Hagerstown, for instance?
Well, I think it's going back to what I just said, smaller schools that are more community-based schools that have, that whole one-room schoolhouse kind of feel more, where you have teachers that come in and kind of help individualize the educational plans for students. So, if I came in with my kid, we would figure out, we would meet on a regular basis and understanding where that kid is and what they're interested in and how to develop those skills. So it's looking at developing plans from the get-go. Right. Okay, where are they at reading, writing, and the simple things like math, but where are they going? Like, what do they want to do? What are they really interested in?
And
what's their passion?
And the teacher could say, you would fit in better up the street.
And we figure this school, here and have more tailored schools.
Hagerstown, for instance, would be sprinkled with different little schools.
Different little schools, but you do hybrids,
that cater
too.
To
as we get up to the middle and high school, doing a lot more hybrid classes where you have some things that are online, doing some things in the classroom, hands-on. You know, it's just differentiating how we do things. It takes thinking outside the box to create a new system.
No, I'm with you on that, yes.
But it means a complete overhaul, and it's not so easy to do.
No.
And that's where we are stuck in putting small Band-Aids on a really huge problem. If the model doesn't fit for where we're going, the model might need to be scrapped.
I just had an idea.
Oh, good God.
Shopping malls are starting to go extinct, right? We got empty shopping malls everywhere. Why don't we just have
Sears
turn them into a school?
Why don't you turn that into a
that could be two floors right there, right?
Each little storefront
could be a little boutique school in there.
There you go.
Right?
I mean, seriously, you have a community right there in a mall. All these dead malls around the country.
You have the food court.
There's your cafeteria.
There's your cafeteria. Exactly.
Yeah, you can go get Sbarro, you know.
Right. The internet killed the internet killed the mall.
There you go. We're going to have a big educational complex.
We have the facilities for it.
Now get me the funding. And
I said money no object, damn it.
Plus, it would be a lot easier to get your kid out of bed in the morning if you said, come on, we're going to the mall.
Yeah, there you go.
You can get an Orange Julius and a pretzel while you're in class. I mean, where else can you do that? You
know? Now, in all fairness, you know, we have seen a little bit of a shift that way with Barbara Ingram and the public
with our magnet
Academy,
schools, yeah.
With the magnet schools. So
we're not seeing that for everyone.
Right. We're not seeing that for everyone yet.
Barbara Ingram,
it's starting
school of the arts,
to be
which is
a
downtown
shift in
Hagerstown.
The right direction.
I think it's a shift in I don't always see it's a shift in the right direction completely. I see it as a way to have still the same model.
Right.
I feel like the model needs to be a lot different for our early learning, because if we know anything about our educational gaps, a lot of our gaps are happening in the elementary years.
Before,
in the elementary years, and they're never being made up.
Right.
And that's why working with WCPS and HCC, Beacon House, the three of us are working on a large grant to figure out, as a grant proposal, how we can do some more work with the out-of-school-time partners like Boys and Girls Club, Girls Inc., to actually figure out ways to take what they're learning in school and do some creative, engaging ways to do some projects to go over that same content for each grade level after school.
I think that's the name of R. Kelly's new album, Girls, Inc. Pretty sure.
You think so?
Goodness.
Yeah.
I think he's working on that.
Oh,
that's
no.
great, man. That's awesome.
No, but like, it's really...
R. Kelly.
He said R. Kelly.
Wow, Chris. Left field, Canfield.
Woo! There. But yeah, it's really like figuring out creative partnerships. Yeah. And WCPS is open to things, and that's what's good about them. Like, they're really looking to think about ways to change.
Are they open? Like, they want to make it happen? And there's going to be a lot of effort.
They're at the table working on this grant with HCC and Beacon House. Like, so they're actively pursuing ways to figure out to change with the times to help increase learning. But if you look at it, things have improved in Washington County by the report cards that have come out recently, but also understanding that there's a lot to do because the demographics of Washington County keep changing and have changed drastically in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Figuring out ways to work and increase the learning for all and making sure that all kids are prepared to learn when they come into the school system as well. There's a lot to go on. There's multiple facets of the problem at the community level.
Like, watching Anthony, I feel like he's had this conversation before.
Right.
He's like just rambling.
He just goes right through.
Well, you are in charge and you do a lot of this work, you have to have this conversation all the time.
It's not just an elevator pitch, it's an escalator pitch all the way up. You know?
how would that go over with my parents if I just went to school and I said, listen, I was unprepared to learn. I'm sorry.
Sorry. That's all it was. That's all
it
comes
was.
Down to.
I was just unprepared.
Yeah.
I've
going to make some picture
frames.
I've
never heard
anybody
say that before.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think it's...
you got to make sure you got to make sure they're prepared to learn.
Yeah, I think it's admirable. I like what you're doing,
sir.
Man.
Oh, okay. Skills. Knowledge base. Come on.
All pencils and paper. The safety scissors.
Safety scissors? That's safety what you need,
Chris. Those aren't skills. Those are actual equipment and products.
Oh,
wrong
I got
thing,
you.
I know. He's getting you, man. He's nailing just like last time.
Damn, I should have stayed in school.
You should have. Well, it's sawdust on your brain, dude.
It just gets you dead. It just gets you dead.
I know.
It's really not worth it at the end, maybe. I don't know.
Well, Anthony, I've been meaning to have you on. It's great having you on. We definitely want to have you back on and check in with you throughout 2019. We'll come to you, see how things are going, so we
Sounds
can kind of show the world, whoever else is listening, what Beacon House is really about. But hopefully it's inspiring and influence other people. I'm sure other people from the education sectors are listening. And they probably agree with you. They're all nodding their head, you know. And yeah, but
some.
You know, I know I chose you on a Sunday. It's your day off, and you were going to chill out. But then here you are. No wonder you're giving me that look, just talking about this stuff again and again.
That's what I do all the time. Just talk and bring information up, because I feel like we need to have these conversations more and more.
I gotcha.
And figure out ways to work together and not work in our isolation.
Awesome. Well, again, we'll have you back on. I appreciate you coming on and expressing yourself and let the whole world know what's
Express
going on.
That's what I was waiting for.
Yes, sir.
Little Madonna over there.
I was going for NWA.
Oh, I got Madonna from that one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that Express Yourself.
Yeah.
See,
it's a little higher.
Right, listen,
pitch over
tell you
there.
What, we're going to be right back. We're going to have Ken Buckler. Yourselves. He's got some history from the Washington County, Hagerstown area for us. It's been a while. It's been since May. Remember Anita Biscuit?
Oh,
good
yes.
Good times downtown, right? Hagerstown.
Yeah, Anita Biscuit.
Yeah.
Anita Biscuit.
I might go make myself a biscuit on during the break.
Why don't you go do that, Pillsbury?
Yeah.
All right, we'll be back. Hub Show.
Trade show displays, step and repeat backdrops, pull-up banner stands, table throws, all your large printing needs. ExpoNetUSA.com, 301-378-9363. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Hub Show back. Anthony Williams from the Beacon House still with us. Jay Heiss, Chris Canfield, and Mr. History Ken Buckler is back with us after a long hiatus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. History, that rhymes.
Mr. History. If you say it fast enough, right?
Yeah.
Misty. Mister.
Let's not start calling me that, please.
No.
Misty? Okay. So for the for a lot of people out there listening who are also from small towns, I'm sure there's plenty of history just like you're going to get when you listen to this. This is Hagerstown, Maryland. Washington County, Maryland. Again, it's an hour northwest of Baltimore, D.C. area, 10 minutes below the Mason-Dixon line, right, what is considered north, right? So we're south.
Kind of in the middle of,
here we go.
You know,
we're 3
Pittsburgh
hours from Philly, 4 hours from New York. We're 2 hours, 2.5 hours, give or take, from Pittsburgh. But Hagerstown got some interesting history that a lot
like
of people from here don't
I
even
like
know.
I like to think of it as in the middle of all the entertainment.
Oh, yeah. We're the entertainment hub. I tell you
the
what.
The entertainment hub.
Yeah. Hagerstown. Well, all right, Ken, what you got?
Well, you know, it's funny you talk about the location of Hagerstown. So,
yep.
Because a lot of the history I'm actually going to talk about today has to do with the location of Hagerstown.
Makes sense.
You know, something I want to read here real quick. This is a book. It's called Images of America, Hagerstown.
Right.
This was published, I want to say, maybe 10, 15 years ago. It's Historical Images of Hagerstown. The introduction is what really gets to me.
Please.
For over two centuries, since its founding in 1762, Hagerstown has been a central player in the history of our country. And is literally at the crossroads of history and commerce.
Right.
All right. And they're not wrong. I mean, you know, we've had amazing leaps in aviation here through Fairchild
That's
and
right.
development of the A-10 Warthog, which
right here in Hagerstown.
Still cannot be replaced.
Nope.
And we've had some amazing things here.
Right.
We've also had some pretty sad ones. You know, and I debated long and hard on actually talking about this topic, because this is a sore subject for a lot of people in this area.
Still.
And it's the Central Chemical plant off of Mitchell Avenue in Hagerstown. And for those not aware, so what Central Chemical did, they were producers of fertilizers, insecticides, and pesticides. Now, I'm going to use the term producers very loosely, because towards the end, they were not actually producing anything.
Okay.
They started out producing fertilizer.
Right.
And the way they would do that, they'd actually bring in the raw materials for the fertilizer.
Right.
And they'd actually create the phosphates using a dissolved bone method. All right, I'm not even going to, you know, get into all of that stuff.
No, please don't.
But
Anthony could probably get into that.
Those are laughing.
Possibly. And then they would sell it to farmers.
Okay.
So what ended up happening, though, was they found that it was becoming cheaper to simply become a blender. And what that means is they would bring in the fertilizer materials that somebody else already prepared. And then they just blend them together, and then they'd sell that blending to local farmers.
As the product.
Right, as the product.
Gotcha.
You know, at their heyday, they actually had 25 million in sales in the 1970s between Central Chemical and its subsidiaries that were regional.
Okay.
But the problems they ran into were that the fertilizer usage and insecticide and pesticide usage, one, was starting to really get cracked down on by the EPA.
Right.
But also fertilizer usage, the manufacturing and distribution was shifting further south.
Right.
So it used to be that the mid-Atlantic states where we're located at here was really the center of it all.
Right.
But as that shift started shifting south, Central Chemical found themselves on the very edge of everything. So now we have somebody on the outskirts of the entire area that's distributing this stuff, and they're trying to ship to the entire area. And that created, of course, a whole lot of logistical concerns.
Sure.
But what really, really makes this part sad isn't the failure of their business because of that. What makes it sad is the lives that are affected in the process.
Right.
So, for those not aware, Central Chemical is on the EPA's, it's called a Superfund site list.
Okay.
And what that means is the ground is so contaminated that it will take millions of dollars to clean up.
So it's not a good list to be on.
No.
Okay.
No, it is not a good list to be on.
All right.
In fact, that site in particular is so contaminated, it's not only just on the Superfund list, it's on their national priorities list.
Damn. Right here.
Yes.
Today,
right here.
Still today.
Yeah, still on the national priorities list. It's listed as, I believe it's in progress instead of active now, because Central Chemical is no longer producing. Okay. But what's really unfortunate is they just didn't know how bad the contamination was until decades afterwards.
So are we? So it's not like that the plant was just dumping the chemicals. They were making poisonous fertilizer, and it was being spread all over the fields.
It wasn't just it wasn't the fertilizer as much as it was. So eventually, the fertilizer actually the plant caught fire, and they shut down that part.
Right.
But they were still producing insecticide and pesticide.
Okay.
Unfortunately, some of the chemicals that they were creating were the two main ingredients in Agent Orange.
Mm. Which, are they connected with the other company, the Big M?
I'm not going to get into the whole logistics of how different companies were.
But
I will tell you that there are, and I actually have it here, it's a dozen companies.
Wow.
Who were considered customers of Central Chemical. Mm. And I say customers, but some of them were actually suppliers and customers.
Either way,
at the same
they're connected, right? Yeah.
$14.3 million settlement with the EPA to clean up just that site.
How big is the site?
Yeah, what kind of area are we talking about?
Yeah, what kind of land
you just said
are we
Mitchell
talking?
Avenue,
yep.
But I mean.
Mitchell Avenue. So I don't have any actual statistics. I do have a map here, though.
You brought visuals.
Which of course, you know, this is, you know, that's radio broadcast, so obviously that's not going to do us much good. But, I've
but
got
if
a
you
map
live in
here.
Hagerstown, you might want to see this.
I've got a map here, so you can see here. So here's Mitchell Avenue.
Sure.
And it goes all the way from Mitchell Avenue to the housing development back behind where Central Chemical was.
Yeah.
So, and what's really unfortunate is that, so here's another map I've got that shows you where they tested that was outside of the Central Chemical grounds.
Yeah.
And sure enough, they found contaminants in the area that housing development is now built at.
Let me ask you a question, because on a bigger scale, I know of Love Canal up in New York State. Mm-hmm. I know the whole history of that. When did they discover when did they discover there's a problem?
So the official word was the 1970s.
Right.
That was the official word for when they actually found
now, was
the problem.
It, was it found out because of someone getting medical problems?
It was
the dog
found
had
out
two
because
tails or what?
There were complaints from neighbors regarding air quality in the area.
Right.
Unfortunately, the state of Maryland did very little to actually require them to fix it.
They obviously didn't take it seriously at first.
Well, they did not.
No.
Well, when the same old lady complains about her cat getting stuck in a tree 10 times a week.
But now her cat's got
two
tails.
Now she's complaining about air quality and nobody wants to listen.
But her kittens are all got two tails, and there's a problem for this.
Yeah.
Three eyes.
Right.
You know? Yet we know what's going on with the EPA currently and things like that. So we know that still the EPA doesn't seem to have the legitimacy in this country as it should for doing what it's supposed to be doing, which is protecting the people from corporations
things like this.
And things like that for dumping chemicals. So keep that in mind as well.
So
thank you, Anthony.
So
Beacon
what,
House.
What really tipped them off on this was after repeated complaints and everything, at some point there were some water tests run against the Antietam Creek, which is a mile away from the facility. And those water tests said there's DDT in the water.
Nice.
At that point, DDT had not been used for a very long time and for local farms. So, like, where in the world did this come from? They ran dye tracers using the water at the Central Chemical, and they actually found that, this DDT is actually washing off of the ground at Central Chemical into a storm drain and then traveling a mile to the Antietam Creek.
Now, this is in the early 70s. Is it getting discovered? What's going
70s,
on?
70s, 80s is when the actual investigation started.
So when the investigation started, was Central Chemical still existing?
Central Chemical was still existing.
Still
they were on their way out.
On the way out, but they were still
operating.
They
were on their way out. They were still operating. What's really sad is that we actually knew about these problems from a study done in 1958.
Oof.
The state of Maryland.
Yep.
Did a study, 1958, the results came out in 1962, analyzing the water resources of the entire state. They analyzed the water from a observation well at Central Chemical.
Yep.
And it says, and this is a quote from the results, the analysis water from the well, which was 318 feet deep.
Yeah.
Indicates chemical contamination of the groundwater at this site.
No shit.
Now, at that point, that raises the question of, well, why in the world did they not elevate
that? Do something
that?
About it, right?
You know?
But then they're raising flags.
But then they sat on it for another almost 10 years, and further water quality testing wasn't performed until 1976.
Yeah. I guess it was diluted.
That was when they found the DDT in the Antietam.
It was diluted enough that it didn't run down the Potomac to D.C., by the time, right?
So
if it got to D.C., it would have made some change.
Right, yeah.
There are multiple places probably along the Antietam to the Potomac that probably were polluting the water at that time.
Hence
the name of the book, Silent Spring, understanding like that was the big call that we needed to do something about our waterways in the United States because, two-thirds of them were like not even able to be swam in, you couldn't fish in. If you know anything about the history of the United States, that's when the real movement for environmental protection and rights and the whole Green Party gets its roots back that time, looking at environmental awareness and why we need to be sustainable.
They still say today that you shouldn't eat fish out of the Potomac, but I do.
He just had dinner.
If I catch it, I'm
still sitting
it.
Here.
Right.
So what's really interesting, though, is so after they discover that, we've got this huge problem.
Right.
So they go in and they start testing the Central Chemical sites. Now, Central Chemical actually had three different facilities in the area. They had the main facility, which is the one I'm talking about now.
Right.
They had a warehouse facility, which was out by Park Circle.
Right.
And then they had another warehouse facility, actually not too far from Hagerstown Community College, right near the right off the Antietam Creek.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as I know, those additional facilities didn't have any contamination. But their main facility, they actually had two dump sites that they would frequently dump excess chemicals into.
How close is this to your house, Chris?
Wow. So one,
actually, it's right where I used to live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one was actually burial trenches, where they would dig long trenches, and they just dump their barrels or whatever into the trenches, mm-hmm. and then fill the trenches back up.
Like they did with bodies in the Civil War.
Well, yeah. So
bodies and bullets and lead.
That's right.
Everything's
on
the ground
Antietam
around
battlefield,
here.
Right?
Yeah, the Antietam battlefield.
That one, that part of the site is pretty toxic as far as the stuff that got buried, but it's all pretty shallow. So that's bad for, oh, hey, it's close to the surface, but also it's good because it's not close to the water table. The other site is the site that is kind of concerning. The other site was actually what was known as the lagoon, and there was a sinkhole in the middle of that lagoon. Well, that sinkhole goes down below the water table. So that means that as the water table naturally rises and falls, the water table's coming up inside of everything that's been buried, grabbing some of those chemicals, and then when it recedes, the stuff goes back out into the water table.
Right, and we've been having a lot of flooding this year.
Yes.
Lots and lots. It just rained this weekend.
Rainfall, isn't it?
Yeah. I haven't used my sprinklers once this summer, man. Uh-huh. Never turned them on.
So once they started analyzing all of this, they actually did a survey of the nearby development next to it. Now, this is extremely sad the way they did this here. So they checked for DDT and DDE, which were the two major carcinogens. They didn't test for non-carcinogens. But when they did the testing, they'd drill into the soil, get soil samples, and then test it for the chemicals. Now, read this map right here. All right, this is the map of that development next to it. And it says right here, contaminants of DDE exceeds residential RBC in this developed residential parcel.
What area? What's the time on this? 1997.
Yeah, this was 1997. June 1997.
Yep.
Wow.
All right. So, then that's the map. All right, and they've got additional areas there that were undeveloped at the time, which are now developed, by the way.
Right. Mm-hmm. They keep building and building.
And what's interesting is then I've got here the final report. And the final report says, well, we didn't test for non-carcinogens, and the chemicals that exceeded RBCs are DDE and DDT,
right.
And these chemicals are included in the quantitative assessment. According to the quantitative assessment, because these levels were low, that we do not believe that there's a lifetime increased cancer risk that exceeds EPA requirements.
This is the report from 20 years ago.
This is the report from 97.
21 years ago.
So even though the evaluations exceeded EPA levels,
they reported
the EPA then reevaluated the stuff as an extended lifetime, whatever. And, oh, hey, no, it's okay because, no, as long as you only live there for 9 years, you'll be fine.
I never understand
anything
it.
Beyond that.
I never understand the world when it comes to testing stuff. And they just choose what they want to test and
what they don't want to test. There's money involved. There's politics involved.
Even in the health industry, when they're going to test your blood, like, why don't you just test it for everything? Like, why do you have to, like, say, oh, well, we're only going to test it for this and this. And you got to ask your doctor to say, hey, can you go ahead and see about the vitamin D while you're at it? Well, why aren't you just checking it to begin with?
Ken,
you
here
just
we are.
Check everything.
Hey, Chris and Ken, you guys are from all this area, been here all this time. I mean, here we are, 21 years later. Where is the situation stand? When's the last time this is even a topic?
This is actually still a topic.
Well, obviously.
The last update I've gotten from it was from February of this year.
Okay, 2018.
Yep. And
they say
that's when they said that
keep
over a dozen
grass.
Companies, $14.3 million settlement with the EPA to clean it up, that they're going to continue treating the groundwater through 2019.
Who are they settling with if the company doesn't exist anymore?
Right. How does that even work?
The customers and suppliers of Central Chemical.
What about the people who've been living there for the last 40
years?
Well,
see, that's the thing is the
unfortunately, people that go to school there.
Exactly.
You have several schools right in that area.
People who live and go about their business in that area. are being affected.
Oh yeah. So
I
what
don't
they're
say
doing?
Anything, but North High, you better look
Western
out.
Western Heights, all of those, the Marshall Street, they're not that far away. No. You have many schools within short right. distance of this site. Right.
So what their current plan is, they're going to do what's called a binding agent consisting of cement, ground blast furnace slag, and activated carbon.
There you go.
And they'll actually pump this material
everything sticks
into
to carbon.
The ground to solidify the ground where the contaminants are
gotcha.
To keep the contaminants from escaping.
Is it a Band-Aid or is it... We don't know,
well,
right?
Well, it should
the industrial
be...
age is 160, 150
yeah.
years old, right?
I mean, it should be...
Who knows what we haven't discovered
a
yet?
A fix. Right. I mean, it technically everything's a Band-Aid because everything breaks down over time.
Right.
But, I mean, is it a long-term solution? I sure hope so.
Sure.
You know, the only other solution that they would possibly have
mm-hmm.
would be too prohibitively expensive, and that would be to excavate the entire site.
So now, right. let me ask
and how you. Has nobody ever, through history, gone after them for anything like this?
Yeah, when did
like
the company officially close?
The workers in the company had to be getting sick and stuff,
what's,
right?
What's the history
of nobody
how long has OSHA really been around, though? I mean,
I hear you.
It hasn't been... You know, and how long has OSHA even cared about this kind of stuff?
But Ken, yeah. as these investigations start in the 70s, late 70s, early 70s, you said they were on their way out. When did that when did the chemical company officially close its doors? Start running as a business?
Let me see here. 1984 is when they actually finally closed. Now, here's the interesting part about that, though. So, obviously, those chemicals degrade over time.
Hopefully.
So the real problem that we probably have been seeing is, so after the company closed, it was just this an abandoned place.
Building, right.
Place. That kids absolutely loved to hang out at.
I'll bet.
In fact, there was actually
makes a... Makes me feel good.
Right, yeah. There was actually a quarry nearby that was linked through the groundwater, and yes, kids would go swimming in that quarry.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care.
I know several people who did swim in that quarry, and they do have some health issues now.
You think it's from swimming in the quarry?
I can't say that for sure.
Is it skin? What
they
is it?
Believe it might be.
What's that? Well,
I think
some of the
respiratory.
Symptoms. Respiratory?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, for a while there was a database being built. I wasn't the one running this database, but it was somebody that actually lived near Central Chemical growing
sure.
up,
yeah.
actually was building a database of people who used to live there and mm-hmm. what kind of health issues they had. And she said she was seeing a trend where,
yeah,
you
what's
know,
the worst
significant.
You heard? The Love Canal had miscarriages and all kinds of stuff.
The,
you know what I mean?
The worst I've heard is neurological.
Really?
And that's not unsurprising since... Like I said, two of the chemicals they were using there and dumping into the same dumping site were the two chemicals used that when you mix together, it creates Agent Orange,
mm-hmm.
Which that in itself created a lot of birth defects as well as neurological issues
right.
when it was used. So for someone that was swimming in a lagoon, possibly in a quarry, possibly contaminated
Jeez.
With that same chemical, it's not surprising that they... have those issues.
Right. It's hard to believe. Oh, like right. I thought about this, the kind of same mental process when 9/11 happened, but it's like who would be running the company or heading up the company and think that just going out and just take the barrels out back and dump them? Like that's a good idea. They never thought about that?
Right?
And like when I go through an airport now.
Out
and
of
I
sight,
go through,
out of mind.
When I go through an airport now and you go through the scanners and everything and you think, oh, this didn't happen. We didn't have these scanners until 9/11 happened. Well, you mean people could have just carried anything on an airplane? You weren't regulating this?
For the most part.
You weren't regulating this beforehand?
No, for the most part.
It's weird that you don't think that far ahead, right? Nobody mm-hmm. thinks about the future.
And that was done with box cutters.
Yeah.
I mean, right. you know? So,
right?
I mean,
I don't know.
So,
you know, Ken.
Yeah, you know. And
chemistry, man.
Yeah.
Today's lesson.
Yeah.
The Hub Show is brought
to really
you by.
It's really scary, you know. And
you have other sites there, like Maryland Metals that have
oh, yeah.
Oh, it goes on. Here we go.
Cleaned up as well.
Or for that matter, Fairchild.
Yep, Fairchild.
Fairchild.
That whole area.
Airport area?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, and a lot of that
you grew
was,
up around here, Chris. Explains it, man.
Like I said, I've always thought about the battlefield.
Yeah.
Like, there's all kinds
that's where
of
I live. Yeah.
That, like, munitions just buried in the land.
Yeah, people
and
tell
stuff.
Me even to this day they can go out there and find, you know, the rounds.
Yeah,
from
and
Civil War.
And Bloody Lane, they would just dump bodies.
It my
just
house is built
on
that.
Pile on top of one another.
Right.
It's just crazy. And then just throw some dirt on it. It'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, here we are 100 years later.
In my basement.
Here we are 100 years later getting poisoned.
They didn't know any better at the time.
They didn't
I don't
know.
Think they did.
Yeah.
Did they know any better in the 60s and 50s?
I think they were starting to wake up a little.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's face it. They really, the general public didn't know. And, you know, for chemical companies like this, they didn't care.
Well, just to explain how bad it is, I don't know if you guys know your history. It seems like you know about Love Canal in New York. My God. I mean, they built whole housing communities on this thing, and this stuff was bubbling up on people's lawns and in their basements. Ooh. I mean, that's how bad it was.
Huh.
In the school that they built, it was coming up in the water. I mean,
that's crazy.
From a company doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Just burying the barrels.
It's like the fracking,
you know,
going on now.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
The fracking is coming through people's plumbing and stuff.
Sure.
And I know we're probably running a little bit short on time, but I want to share you real quick one of the stories that got shared with me.
Yeah.
So one of the people that grew up in that area, her dad actually worked at Central Chemical.
Okay.
Quite often, Central Chemical would actually produce while they were creating their pesticide or whatever it was they were creating, there would be some sort of a mist or something come out of their smokestacks.
Nice.
That would fall down and look like snow.
Here you are.
When her father would get home, his clothes, you know, like his overcoat,
it
would actually be covered
residue.
In that snow.
Yeah.
Well, she thought, oh, hey, that's cool. It's snow. So she would actually shake the coat up in the air.
And pretend that she's in the snow globe.
And pretend she was in the snow globe and try to catch the snow in her mouth.
Well, her dad never said don't do that?
And her dad never, he didn't know. They never told their employees.
But he knew it wasn't
how dangerous
snow
the stuff was.
All right. I'm just saying.
So,
hey, asbestos coming
bugs,
from the ceiling. Open your mouth. It's
right.
Yeah,
right.
We're not bugs. It only kills bugs.
I mean, yeah, that's all.
It's fine for us.
You're not a mosquito.
You're right.
You'll be all right. She starts flying around them.
Yeah. So
fly.
You know, that's the kind of stories that when people tell me that about
it
Central
is,
Chemical, it makes you realize that we really just had no idea how dangerous some of that stuff was.
Again, small town, but that's here. I mean, and there is it a sore subject for a lot of people?
Oh, it is. You know, in fact, there's the Western Maryland History Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually started posting about that in there before, and they've actually taken my posts down, and they you know, kind of pulled me to the side and said,
really?
Hey,
it's
don't,
too toxic, no
don't,
pun intended?
Well, yeah, he said, hey, don't talk about that, because that's a really sore subject for a lot of people in this area, because a lot of people have health issues because of it, but they don't want to come forward and talk about it.
But then, and Anthony's going to answer, who do you go after? I mean, if someone really wanted to ratchet it up and turn the volume up and say, bullshit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and how are you gonna make any change? If you have health problems up from it and you don't want to talk about it.
Don't want to talk about it.
Why would you not want to talk about it? Grab a bullhorn and go out and yell about it.
And I don't have the list in front of me, but there is a list of many companies that the EPA has decided is financially liable for a lot of that stuff. But then, of course, it's already been a settlement on it. So what can you and I do about it? Nothing. There's nothing we can do, unfortunately.
Just don't drink the water.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Well, yeah.
But it's also education and understanding as we move forward.
Yeah, you have to understand.
We talked about politics and things like that, making sure that when we have companies coming here that
this doesn't happen again.
They don't do this again, but making sure that people know, right?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's the big key, is like making sure people know and understand things.
They're not repeating
education.
Ourselves here, right?
Yeah, we got to learn from our past.
Well, even the city of Hagerstown has, you know, they have their own black eye in the municipal power plant that got tore down. You know, the city, even though they no longer own the land, they had to help pay for that cleanup because of how contaminated the ground was there, at the power plant.
I
right
about
by
East,
the water as well.
Is that yeah. Eastern Boulevard?
Yeah.
Yep, Eastern.
Right, the one across, more,
across yeah. from the stadium.
Let me ask you, I have a question for someone who's not been here. Across the street from that, you drive by it, and it looks like there was a big industrial company,
yep.
and the railroad tracks actually run into
it
the...
It was a recycling.
Is that yeah. what that
it
was?
It was a, it was a news, what, yeah, newspaper recycling.
How long
plant.
Was that abandoned? It's just sitting.
It was open for maybe about a year.
That's yeah, it was very long, and
yeah,
then it closed.
And what happened was they spent millions of dollars to open it,
yeah,
and then the price of paper dropped.
Mm-hmm.
So it was no longer financially profitable to recycle the paper there
Oops.
At that plant.
Oops.
But that facility was built just for that?
That yep. entire facility
it
was built
for recycling paper. It looks
like
the railroad tracks
paper.
Run to
that's
it
why.
For a reason. Yeah,
yeah. That was to bring in
the
and
that's not
and
that long
ship
ago.
Out. Nope. No, no.
It looks like it's been sitting
that
there for like 50 years with some weeds on
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah.
Over.
I mean, it so that was actually built in my lifetime and Anthony's
lifetime.
Yeah, it was
like early 2000s. It was after
yeah.
high school for after, me, after college. Jesus, so that'd be early 2000s.
Yeah, it built and closed all within... A couple years.
Short period of time.
That thing yes. looks like it's been sitting there since the 70s, the way if you drive by it with the weeds and everything. But
there's
right.
no
who know.
Yeah. It's just abandoned.
And nobody wants to
dude.
Use the building for anything else.
Well, it's only a paper recycling plant.
It's designed for that.
It can't be reused for anything.
What
much
a waste,
else.
Though.
Right.
Someone yes. wants that land. They'd have to go in there and tear all that down. To be on them to clean it up.
Now, I have seen activity around there within the past couple months. So
okay.
I don't know if somebody's looking at buying it or what. But I suspect it could be prohibitively expensive to renovate it for any other use.
Hmm.
So
that's so sad.
All right.
You just think this day and age. By this day and age, I mean the 2000s. It wouldn't be an issue, but. A building's already been put up. Company's already been abandoned.
Right.
You know, it's just sitting there like, you know.
Yeah.
It's like looks like some place a Scooby-Doo cast would go to look for the ghosts and solve a mystery, man.
And, yeah. and you know, and to reel this back in for the original reason why I started researching businesses
right.
in Hagerstown.
Yeah.
Is what the hell went wrong.
Yeah.
And it was short-sighted planning, unfortunately.
A series of unfortunate events.
Yeah. You know, that somebody made a bet that... Hey, the paper prices are going to stay high, so it's going to be profitable to open this plant and bring in all these people and give them jobs, and they gambled wrong.
Right.
You know, unfortunately, the same thing ended up happening.
Dunder Mifflin, man.
Somebody said, what are we going to do with all these toxic stuff? Just go
right.
dump it in the bathroom,
right.
we'll be all right.
It's a creek, not a river.
Well, yeah, and you know, and you're
don't
not
worry
wrong
about it.
Because, it, you know, it was actually... Once they started having to properly dispose of their chemicals, it was no longer as profitable.
Chris,
so what happened? They closed up shop.
As right. a kid, did you fish, swim Antietam Creek? What did you do?
Not much.
A little skinny dip in
there? I
almost
drowned in Antietam Creek one time, but that's another story.
A lot of water in there, though.
Yeah.
In your system.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it didn't get in my system.
No?
No. When you don't know how to swim and you get dumped into water where your feet can't touch the ground, you learn how to walk on water.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. La-dee-da.
You learn how to swim really
like
quick.
I see that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where's that on VHS?
Right.
Mom, film this. Anyway, we can. Yeah. I love it, man. I know there's plenty more where this comes from, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
All Hagerstown history.
Yeah.
And for all you other small towns out there, you got plenty of history just like this.
And you dig it up,
it's crazy what you find.
All across the land.
And I'm going to start expanding a little bit beyond Hagerstown as well.
Okay.
So... You know, hopefully have some other good stories. Like, one of the ones I'm really going to start looking into, and hopefully we can do a future show on this,
sure.
is going to be how the C&O Canal brought industry to Western Maryland,
mm-hmm.
Especially, like, for example, the Cushwa Coal Company, and which, you know,
which
and now we've
Cushwa
got the Cushwa
Brewing Company
now instead.
No
which,
free plugs here, pal.
You know.
I'm just kidding. To the Cushwa Brewing Company. Just
yeah.
kidding. All good.
And it really helped drive mm-hmm. Hagerstown and Washington County as a whole.
C&O Canal.
Yes.
Stands for?
Chesapeake and Ohio.
Okay.
Yes.
And it brought tons of business this way.
It did.
Okay.
You know, and originally it was supposed to go all the way up to the Ohio River.
Mm-hmm.
It never completed.
Okay.
And a lot of the reason for that was actually because...
It's because the donkeys started drinking the water.
Well, yeah. No, a lot of that was actually because locomotives started becoming more popular. So there's a wonderful picture here.
He's doing charades
that,
over here.
That I actually saw at one point in time. Somebody managed to get a picture of a canal boat right next to a locomotive because they built the tracks right next to the canal. Uh-huh. And it's basically the perfect symbol of it because they were both racing to try to deliver the goods in the most economic way.
Really?
The railroad won out.
And it's a historical landmark here in Hagerstown.
They had to have a race all the way down to find out that a train is faster than a boat on a canal.
All the way up to Allegheny.
It wasn't about speed. It was about what was more economic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So is it more economic to supply a train with a conductor and fuel and water and create steam?
That probably would be a pretty
tough race. Or is it more economic to provide a donkey with feed?
Yeah.
But the steam won out over the donkey.
Gotcha.
So. Mm-hmm.
Trains versus asses.
Yep.
Yeah. Full series on that one, I can see.
Full caboose.
It's like when John Henry, when he was trying to beat the steam shovel.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Man collapsed and died.
That's it.
Yep.
Do tell us, Griff.
I'd say that was the end. That was the end of that story.
End of your
story. Steam shovel definitely won that one.
Yep.
All right. Well, I know where I'm editing. All right. Well, hey, Ken. No, you're more than welcome back on. We're going to have you back on soon. And let me talk about what we got coming up under the Hub Show.
Yes.
We got Cyber Monday is going to happen.
Absolutely.
We're still working on a working title here.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about cybersecurity and technology and take questions, expose your expertise on this stuff.
Right.
And show people how vulnerable they are right now. They don't realize it.
Right.
Scary it is.
One of the first topics I want to try to cover going to be credit card processing and some of the vulnerabilities that we face with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do we have this shift towards chip cards?
Right.
You know, a lot of consumers hate them because it takes longer to get through the line.
But there's a reason why.
There's definitely a reason why.
We'll get down to the nitty-gritty and all this stuff and talk about that. Cybersecurity, technology. The machines are coming, Chris.
They're coming. They're already here.
Yeah. Terminator.
The AI wars.
Yeah.
They're coming.
It's already happening.
That's it.
I got a call from a spam call, and it was in my mother's phone number the other day.
This is it.
They crossed the line.
I get spam that is calls impressive. All the time.
It's time to cross the line.
Wow.
I get spam calls every 2 hours of the day.
Yeah.
From somebody.
Yep.
This is ridiculous.
It's what happens when you own a business.
Right? It's the robocalls.
Yeah.
It's like, if they don't get you with one number, they call you with another number, the very same, except for the last digit.
Right.
They just bought a whole bunch of numbers and secrets and just keep calling and calling.
Yeah.
And don't get it.
And somehow, the numbers always seem to be from places where either I am or from where I just talked to somebody from.
Right. It really pisses people off, including dogs.
Like, I can't, right? Like, if I get a call from somebody in, like, Buffalo, New York, who is a legitimate client. And then I'll hang up the phone.
Yes.
And then 10 minutes later, I get a robo call from Buffalo, New York.
Me too. Exactly. Like, me too. I got to pick up every call because it might be a prospect, might be a customer.
Yeah.
And it turns out to be, you know, the recording.
Yeah. And how
this
did you know?
Anna.
And how did you know that I was just talking to somebody in Buffalo?
I'm telling you, man.
5 minutes ago.
They're always watching.
It's ridiculous.
Well, I know. But we've talked about that a couple of times, how just me and him talking about something, just between he and I, talking about what were we talking on the way out of the tilt. When they opened Tilt, the arcade here in Hagerstown.
Talk about Dave and Buster's.
Talk about Dave and Buster's. We were talking about it. And all of a sudden, he got
an alert on my phone for, like, hey, here, available for
always
bid.
Always
Dave and Buster's. I mean, we were talking about
always
it.
Always listening. You have your device with you.
We
they
were
can
in
hear
the,
you.
I'll tell you what. We were just in the parking lot. We weren't even inside Tilt or nothing like that.
You had
we weren't near the Pac-Man machine
you
to
had
record
your phone
us.
On you. They hear you.
I'm stupid, man.
Well, they're not hearing this.
No.
No.
Unfortunately, not enough people are. Anyway.
tell your friends and your family.
That's
spread the word.
Beacon House, where can we find you, Anthony, so people can learn more about it?
Our website, thebeaconhouseinc.org, or our Facebook page, Beacon House. Just look for Beacon House Inc.
That's it. All right. And the Hub Show is out there, Facebook, the Hub Show, Instagram, the Hub Show. We're on Twitter.
If you're listening, you found us.
That's it. Definitely.
Yeah.
So spread
and
the word.
If you haven't found us, then you're not listening.
This was a mistake.
And you need, this
but
was,
this
a, mistake.
Was a good mistake.
It was a good mistake.
And keep listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
we're
you need
out
to,
there.
And you need to tell everybody where you found us.
Tell your friends, your sisters, your moms, all of them.
Yep.
Let them know.
Don't forget about the brothers either.
No, those two. Yeah. All right. We're out. Listen, Jay Heiss, Chris Canfield, for Anthony Williams, and for Kim Buckler. Later.
You've been listening to The Hub Show, podcasting and broadcasting about news, views, business and events, health, pop culture, everything and nothing, with your hosts, Chris Canfield and Jay Heisch.